Welcome and thank you for clicking on the Harmonic Concordance blogcast, your source for inspired interviews that explore the edges of consciousness and the role of spirit in our transformative times. Now here's your host, Johnny Marie Hiel.
Hello, folks, and thank you for joining us on this episode of the Harmonic Concordance blog. Today, we're very happy to have with us Reverend Sharla Shamhart. Sharla is an ordained preceptor and reverend in the science of mental physics, which she began practicing back in 1968. She has taught breathwork and meditation techniques, which came out of Tibet. Trained in classical Indian yoga in the 70s, she taught Ashtanga yoga for many years. Sharla studied shamanism with several well-known teachers and uses it in her healing and counseling work. Of Cherokee ancestry, she has been involved in Native American spirituality for more than 30 years and runs a store at powwows called the Desert Star, selling Native American book, music, and other educational materials. A student of herbal medicine for more than 40 years, she went herbaling with her family for the first time at the age of 3. She is certified at the elite master level in the bioenergetic synchronization technique, aka BEST, a healing method developed by Dr. M.T. Mortar. She and her husband, Michael, also hold a weekly Sunday service called The Circle of Life at Rainbow Stew in Yucca Valley. Finally, I'd like to remind you that Sharla's posts for the blog can be found under the themes Conscious Breathing and Sacred Sounds. So, with that introduction, let's welcome in Sharla Shamhart. Hi, Sharla.
Hi, Johnny. It's good to be here with you today.
Well, thank you, Sharla. Thank you for giving up some of your time. I know that you are extremely busy in many of the different venues or different hobbies or projects, but I'm very grateful for you being here.
Always glad to further the consciousness movement.
Well, that's nice. Well, Sharla, please let me ask you to fill us in a little bit on who Sharla Shamhart is, where she began, and how she got to be here now.
I grew up in the deep south, South Georgia, on a farm, a small subsistence farm. And from the time I would go out with my brother to play without assistance, without supervision, from the time I was about 3, we played under a giant oak tree near our home. And I began to see inside the bark of that the face of a rough, gruff old man. And in the beginning, it was very scary, but I figured out that he was nothing to be afraid of. And of course, at that age, I had no idea that not everyone saw these kind of things. It was a very interesting experience looking back at it. And then when I was just about a month before I turned 9, I insisted one rainy Sunday night that we go to church. Now, my mother was missionary Baptist. That makes Southern Baptists look liberal. And for us to go out at night with it rainy on the dark country roads that were dirt was unusual. But my mother said I was very persistent. And that night, I had an experience with the Christ consciousness. The minister had no idea what was going on. Here was a child coming up, and he said, "Do you know what you're doing?" And in great tears, I said, "Yes." But shortly after that, I began to realize that church and that teaching had a lot of walls and closed doors. And so by the time I was 11, still not knowing what was going on, I donned all white clothes that summer. Now, in India, they would have sent me to live in the ashram, but in the United States, I was just rather an oddball child. Then when I was 13, I found a book on yoga and began attempting to do yoga. I also found the teachings of Edgar Cayce and began studying those. By the time I was 16, I had found the teachings of Carlos Castaneda that had just come out and began studying shamanism as best I could with no assistance. And then at 18, I found the Tibetan teachings of Dingli Mei, who had been in Tibet in 1910-1911. When I was 22, I found a yoga teacher. It was at a YMCA, and I drove 40 miles each way. There were people in my hometown that were astounded that I would drive 40 miles for a class and all by myself. Oh, that was astounding to them. But I did that for several years, and then the teacher, Joyce Kramer, took a small group of people that I had brought to the class and began taking us after class to her home and teaching us classical Indian yoga, known today as Ashtanga yoga, as taught by Patanjali, who codified the system of yoga 1,000 or more years ago. And then when I was 26, I had the opportunity to come out to a retreat, a convention at the Institute of Mental Physics. At that time, it was called Yucca Valley, but later the border was drawn, and now it's considered Joshua Tree. And I met a man, Don Adams, who became a mentor of mine, assisted me in learning to read auras, assisted me in doing the breath work in a much more powerful way than I had before. Though I thought I was doing it pretty powerfully, because in the fall of 1975, I had taken Dingli Mei literally at when he said, "Go and find out. This is a great experiment. Explore." And in those days, before we had CDs, I got a cassette recorder and I ordered from a scientific company a 2-minute loop tape. And I made a tape of what they call the 9 positives in the science of mental physics, affirming my oneness with Creator, with the universe, with all that is. And every night before I would go to bed, I would start that continuous loop playing, and I would, using a lap timer, have it play for about 20 minutes as I moved down into the alpha level and down into theta level of the brain waves, so that it would go deep into my consciousness. And then I did something that one may consider wise or unwise. I decided that I wanted the greatest amount of spiritual growth in the shortest amount of time. So I did the breathing techniques as prescribed by the science of mental physics as I was being trained in, and I went into a deep meditation, asking for the greatest amount of spiritual growth in the shortest amount of time. Let me tell you, an atomic bomb hit my life. I had been told in meditation a few years before, "Get thee to California." And I resisted, but my dad is old and he's not well, but I have a good job, but this, but that. Every reason I had for resisting was removed. My father died. I was arrested on a minor offense. I lost my job. Everything stripped away that prevented me. And then I took a serious look at what I would call now as the feather on the cheek. And when we get the word to do something in our life and we resist, then we get the steel-tipped boots in the rear. And I was definitely in steel-tipped boot mode at that point.
I love your colloquialisms. Yeah, great.
So I came to California, and as part of a program out at the Institute of Mental Physics, because so many of the reverends had lost the edge on really how to teach the science of mental physics. If they had ever known the deeper aspects of the breath work, they were doing it by rote, even though many of them had been trained by Dingli Mei himself. But when he died in 1972, he left a script of how to teach. So I met my husband, Michael, out there, who I met briefly that spring. Then he went away for the summer. He came back in the fall, and that feather on the cheek said, "You're supposed to marry this man." Well, I had no concept of that. My mother had assured me several years before that I would never find a man that met my spiritual and dietary expectations because I was vegetarian and very deeply involved in spiritual work. So I thought, well, that's just fine. I don't have to worry about ever getting married. And I dusted my hands off and moved on in my life to live a life in spiritual service. But then when I met Michael, it was a whole different story. Many years later, I realized that we had known each other in a monastery in Tibet in a lifetime in the 1400s. That in the late 1200, early 1300s, we had been married when he was a Mongolian merchant and I was of a high Chinese family. So we'd known each other for many lifetimes. And it became a wonderful experience with someone that feels like my spiritual partner and my soulmate.
That is wonderful to find that within another, a spiritual partnership and a soulmate, as I have with Jan. And I am very grateful for it. All right, so you meet him, and so next.
And so we were married the next spring. March 20th was the first day of spring in 1978. And not long after that, we took some herbal classes with Babs Gabali, a legendary herbal teacher from Morongo Valley who has since passed on. And that began to revive the interest that I had had in herbs. As you had said earlier, I went out herbing with my family the first time when I was 3 years old. By then, I was considered old enough to not go and try to pick up a rattlesnake. And so then when I was 11, I was still wetting the bed. In retrospect, I understand through traditional Chinese medicine that when I fell at 18 months old and broke out all my front teeth, I very likely damaged the bladder meridian, and that left me with a very weak bladder. So at age 11, my mother got out an old antique herb book, and it said use corn silk and watermelon. So she made up an herb tea several times for me, and lo and behold, the problem of bedwetting was cleared. And I began to think, oh my, this is very interesting. Must be something here. And then I heard the stories of how when her father was a boy, he'd had some kind of tumor on his arm. And being country folks, they called an old medicine woman, and she made up a brew of some kind of roots that they believed was white oak bark and something else, and the tumor was cleared. So by the time I was 14, 15, I was having acute female problems. And at 18, an MD said to me, well, I think it's all in your head, and wrote another prescription. All the bells and whistles went off. And I began to really have a distrust of the medical profession. And my response was to walk out of the doctor's office and not go back voluntarily again for many years. I did, however, go to a health department at 20 and had a smallpox vaccine to go overseas. I had a mini stroke that left my right eye hanging. And I still, 45 years later, have numbness in that side of my face and a weakness in my eye. In retrospect, I realized that this was connected with vaccine damage that I'd had after the live polio sugar cube vaccine when I was 11 that led to a long series of health complications. So I began to really get interested in what herbal medicine and wild plants could do. But after that doctor declared me mentally ill, I came home, I ordered some books on herbs, and I began collecting wild foods and ordering herbs through mail order because there was no herb shop in the area. And I began collecting a few things and experimenting on myself, which I continue to do today. I have learned so much over the years. In the early 1990s, I began studying the East-West School of Herbology with Michael Tierra. I was unable to, through some complications, to complete those studies, but I learned a lot. For the last 40 years, most of my evenings have been spent studying herbal medicine. It is a fascinating thing to me, looking at how nutrition and what they refer to now as nutraceuticals concentrated foods that act almost as medicines, but we can't really say that because then the FDA gets involved in the picture. We have to say that they're supplements to our devitalized diet that can really help us turn our lives around and find wholeness and wellness again.
Well, it sounds like you're up to your eyeballs, actually, in many different practices. I think that's pretty cool.
Yes, absolutely. And there are times that I've had people come for consultations with me, and times that the Native American powwows, when I would invite people into my booth, and when they would say, I don't know what's going on, can you recommend any herbs? Because we've also carried herbs, both that I have ordered and herbs that I've wildcrafted at the powwows. And I do a technique with putting my one hand on someone's shoulder and then scanning with my right hand, because I can see and feel and know things of what's going on inside their body. Right. I've had people come back to me and say, you saved my life. You sent me to a doctor when I had this or that. You sent me to a chiropractor when this or that was going on with my spine and my nerves. You sent me to an acupuncturist. Oh, those herbs that you gave me, they just really helped me. And sometimes I go into a shamanic altered state of consciousness and let myself be guided as to what someone needs. There was a case about probably 15 years ago where a woman that I knew brought a husband and wife to me to talk about their son who was in first grade and was on the verge of being thrown out of school. He was so disruptive. And so for 2 months, I asked, what did I recommend? Because the reports began coming back. This child was suddenly beloved by his teachers. He was getting along. He was cooperating. He was excelling in his studies. And when they told me, I scratched my head and I said, you know, in a normal state of consciousness, I would never have recommended that for a child. And yet, because I allowed myself to enter that altered state and connect with the energy of that child's body, I was able to see exactly what he needed that could change his life. Those are the kind of things that have made such a difference. Sometimes people are just blown away when I ask them questions about their health or about certain things that are going on, and they say, how did you know that? Well, when I tune in to that energy of the universe, all the information that is in the universe is available to me. It's like it downloads into my consciousness that specific bit that I need to help you, and I can use it with the herbal base of information that I have to recommend things. Sometimes I recommend breath work. Sometimes it's herbs. Sometimes it's nutrients. Sometimes it's diet changes. Sometimes it's meditation. It all depends on what is going on with that person that I sense. And it's rare that I can't tap in and help someone.
Well, it sounds like you have been doing that for a number of years and quite successfully.
Johnny, it's more than just a couple of years. a long time ago, I began to have visions of a Native man in the Southwest, and he was surrounded by children. For a long time, I didn't know what it was. And then in meditation, I began to get a consciousness of having been an Apache medicine man with Cochise, a legendary Apache war chief. And I had been surrounded by children in an effort to find the successor to my medicine ways and to teach that child to raise him up in the ways. I was killed, apparently by the U.S. government. Some have said that I was hanged, as many of the Chiricahua Apache people were. And that man carried my medicine through 1949. If someone could be contacted, an elder in the Chiricahua people, someone would know who River Running Swift was. When I have gone to the Cochise stronghold in southeastern Arizona, I've literally been brought to tears with the pictures that have come back, with the memories, with the knowings. It's like I know the rocks, I know the trees there. It's a place with deep memories in my consciousness. And I know that I practiced herbal medicine ways long before, as well as when I was the life before that, I was gypsy in Eastern Europe. And I have many, many memories of that lifetime and many others going back 1,000 years or more. People have been after me to start writing a book about my memories, and I really need to give attention to that because it can be an inspiration to a lot of other people. We all have these little glimmerings of things, and we think, oh, it's just a passing thought. Maybe it was, and maybe it was more.
This is a fascinating story, the whole thing, from beginning to end. I'm very, very impressed with the many things that you do, and I have known you for a number of years and still was in the dark about many of your activities. So thank you for sharing those with us and with me today.
Glad to share. When I was out at Mental Physics, my husband Michael and I ran the spiritual division at the Institute of Mental Physics, which hosts Joshua Tree Retreat Center, from early 2002 until mid-2006 when we left. And we used to host quite a few Thai Buddhist monks to come out and give teachings there. One of the monks that, when he's in Thailand, he draws anywhere from 300,000 to 400,000 people. He told a student of mine who was a friend of his that the reason I have these gifts is because there were so many lifetimes that I had done the spiritual work that I'm now reaping the benefits of that. And in Patanjali's system of classical yoga, he says, as you gain these powers, these siddhis, as they're referred to in Hindu, he said, don't be drawn to one side or to the other by them. Don't be distracted by them. Keep your eyes firmly on the light at the end of the tunnel, because the union with God, the union with eternal consciousness is our goal, not to become a great seer or a great one who does this or that. But those things are simply byproducts of our spiritual path if we adhere to it.
Well, that's some very, very good advice. Just be who you are, know who you are, and follow the path that's right in front of you. Watch the lamp unto your feet and just keep walking. And obviously you, Sharla dear, have done much walking.
That is what we are here for, I fully believe. We are here to do the spiritual work that we know about. We all know about spiritual tools, but how many times do we apply them? How many times do we allow ourselves to be distracted by the things of the world? But for a long time, my goal as a young woman was nothing but spirituality. I had no interest in making a living, even though I had jobs. I had no interest in the things of the world that would distract one. And then I learned when I studied with a Taoist master, Master Wei Ling Yi, who lives in Berlin, he says the normal way is for a young person to get married and have a family and a job and be interested in things of the world. And then as we grow older, we withdraw and move into our spiritual phase. He said, you've done it the reverse. In Native American ways, we'd call this the heyoka, the trickster.
Backwards, right?
Yes, backwards.
Okay. Look, I agree with you wholeheartedly. Following the spiritual path, the spiritual journey, is what this life is about. It's not about how much you amass, not about power, not about fame. It's about being you and following the path of you. And that listening to spirit is what allows us to do it. So
absolutely.
Thank you for reiterating that for us. You know, that's basically the thrust of those of us who have voice on this blog. That's what we believe in also. Let me take you into a couple more questions and then I'll let you go. You've been certified at the elite master level in this BEST technique. Can you talk about that a little bit?
Yes. Dr. M.T. Mortar Jr. was a biochemist before he became a chiropractor. And at some point in the chiropractic, they had a son that had constant ear infections and constant health problems, and they would take him to the doctor and to the doctor again and again. And finally, Dr. Mortar woke up one day and he said, if I truly believe in this, then I believe that chiropractic can fix all this. And he began adjusting his son several times a day, and the problems went away, not just temporarily, but they went away permanently. And then at some point in his chiropractic practice, he went home and he said, you know, these same people come back to me week after week with the same problems, and I fix them, and they're back again. I'm not going to do this anymore. And he went to bed saying, what am I going to do? I'm a chiropractor, and I don't want to do this anymore. And that night, he had a dream, a vision, if it were, as it were. And he was shown some things to do about working with techniques to clear jammed energy, that energy that gets stuck in our cellular memory and keeps us on a treadwheel of the same illnesses and the same dis-ease day after day, week after week, month after month, year after year. And he tried those techniques, and there were people that got better with no adjustment. And so each night he realized that he was in touch with something much greater than himself. And he would go to sleep each night asking, what can I do to make this work better? And after many years, probably 20 years, people were after him, Dr. Mortar, please teach us. And he codified this into this system called bioenergetic synchronization technique, or BEST as we call it. And it's a technique that works at releasing the energies that block us, that allow us to be renewed in the moment. And and when we let go of those jammed energies, then we can become whole again. And the cellular memory, instead of playing a game of gossip, where it starts out the cells talking to one another, and then it comes back around and it's something totally different, and our cells no longer reproduce in the same with the same information that they started out, we're able to return to that place where the cellular memory is true and can be passed on in a true way, so that we can heal and we can become where we can stay the people that we were intended to be and continue to grow in our spiritual work as well as our physical wholeness.
And the striving for completing ourselves once you become aware of what your responsibilities are, the striving for completing ourselves becomes a part of who we are, and we just do it.
Yes, and it does not mean that we won't stumble and fall. We're human. So that is part of what having a circle around us is, a circle of people who are of the similar spiritual mind. Because when I stumble and fall, those people are there to help pick me back up and help me dust myself off and move forward. A light on the path, just as I'm there for others, just as you're there for others. Just as so many hearing this are there for others in their circles. Because literally, as Yogananda said, it's like throwing a pebble out into the pond and the ripples go out. And those ripples touch other circles where pebbles have been thrown in. And it's an interlocking web of circles in this life.
And knowing it, it enables us to reach out and continue the outreach, let's say.
Yes, it is. And using the breath work is one of the fastest tools that we can do to supercharge our consciousness. Because when we do breath work, conscious directed breath work, before we go into meditation, all of a sudden we're able, as it were, to plug in to universal consciousness and download whatever is needed in the moment for ourselves or for someone else. That, to me, is one of the greatest values of the breath work that I've been trained in.
Would you mind if you would give us a simple yet effective breathwork exercise?
Let me talk about it a little bit first.
Okay.
A lot of yoga techniques start with the root chakra, and you work up from there until you get to the crown chakra. What happens if someone gets caught and trapped in the lower chakras? We see this all the time. People that get trapped into sexuality or in the first chakra, or people that get trapped into socialization and party type things in the second chakra, people that get trapped into power trips in the third chakra that may never make it to the heart chakra. So in this system that Dingle Mei brought back from Tibet, we start from the top, opening the crown chakra. And it comes down to, are we humans having a spiritual experience? Do we start with the root chakra and move upward? Or are we spirit having a human experience? Where if it is that, we start with the crown chakra and move downward through the chakras. And by the time we reach the root chakra, we have the consciousness and looking out into the stars, oh my God, it's true. I am one with the universe. And so in this system of breath work, we began opening the crown chakra. We open our third eye. There is a breath that is specifically for opening the third eye. Then we move down and open the throat chakra, giving voice to our spiritual work. Then we move down into the heart chakra. Of course, the Master Jesus came here to teach opening the heart chakra. Sometimes I think we as a human race are finally just getting a glimmer of what that means. And then we can move into lower three chakras, the power chakra, the solar plexus, into the Dantian, the social chakra, and into the root chakra of creation, not just sexuality, but of creation. What all kinds of things can we use that chakra to create with? The creative power of art comes out of the root chakra. So few people realize this, but it's a fact. And so when we are using these chakras and supercharging them with the breath work, we become much more balanced human beings. Now, in this system of breath work, there is a breath that few people ever address. I call it the zero breath, because Dingle Mei addressed these breaths 1 through 8, starting with the top. But the zero breath is known in yoga as the alternate nostril breathing, called in mental physics as the harmonic breath, because it brings us into a place of harmony and balance. And it's simply that breath where we use our thumb and we close off the right nostril and we inhale vigorously through our left nostril. Then using a finger, we close off both nostrils and we hold. Now, in yoga and in mental physics, there are specific counts to this. But in the beginning, someone simply holds until they are need to release. Then they open the right nostril, exhale vigorously, and then gently inhale vigorously again through the right nostril, holding until they exhale again through the left. This is done with 4 inhalations and 4 exhalations on each side. And then one goes into a meditation, focusing the eyes, rolling the eyes upward into the third eye area. And we began to find peace and balance. My husband Michael uses this breath every night before he goes to bed to have a more restful sleep.
That sounds like something I can use.
we all can use that one.
Yeah.
It's the best basis of yogic breathing.
All right. Well, thank you for walking us through that. Once again, this is a system of breathing that before Dingle Mei was not really known in the West.
No, it was not. Okay. What else is not known about his teachings is that before the Chinese took over Tibet in 1949, there were many monasteries there that taught not only Buddhism and the old Tibetan religion of Bon, but they taught a virtually unknown system that had come out of what is now Iran through a Persian mystic known as Mani, who came very soon after Jesus was on the earth. And whereas Paul, who started the Christian church, was into control and finances and having the hierarchy tell the people what to do, Mani said, we need to plug directly into God, and God will teach us what we need to know. God, by whatever name you want to call it. And so he believed that that was the true teaching of Jesus as the ascended Christ. His teachings came across the Silk Road, and by 900-1000 AD, all of Tibet, a lot of North India and China up to the Yellow River followed the teachings of Mani. We've all heard the chant, Om Mani Padme Hum. and we're told it means O Jewel and the Lotus. Well, as I dug deeper, I began to ask, what is the Jewel and the Lotus? The Jewel was Mani, who brought these teachings of ascension across to Asia. And those were still taught when Dingli Mei was at this monastery in Tibet in 1910, 1911. And we don't know if he knew the origins of this. I do know that the chances are very high that he visited a temple to Buddha Mani that is at the mouth of the Yangtze River in China, where Mani is still recognized today as one of the highest of the Buddhas and the teachings that he brought forth. So it begins to form a very interesting tapestry, how all these things came together.
And they are still together for our benefit.
Aren't they, though? It's amazing.
That works for me.
Yes.
And one last question, if I may, turn you to the circle of life, things that you do with Bill at Rainbow Stew.
Yes. After we left the Institute of Mental Physics, we were very briefly with another church in Joshua Tree, the Church of True Grace. And then after we left that, we formed a church, we formed a center, the Center of Life, which sponsors the Circle of Life at a property that we owned in Yucca Valley. But after Rainbow Stew formed, we wanted to merge our energies with the energies there to create a stronger force. And so since Rainbow Stew opened, we have been holding Sunday services at 10:30 every Sunday morning there that we bill as Spirituality Beyond Religion. And it encourages people, all of the things that we teach there are based in the science of mental physics, but it encourages people to plug directly into that which you call Creator, that I Am Consciousness, and download what is needed for you in any given moment.
And that is always available to us, the idea that we can plug in to that creative consciousness that allows us to be who we are. I'm stuck on that. I think that that's the trip here, to find out who we are. And upon finding out, to act as though we were that complete and whole being.
Yes, that is what Dingli Mei taught. He said, first the thought, you have to get the idea into your mind, and then the feeling. And that's where the breath work comes in. We find our passion, we do the breath work that supercharges this idea, and then the action, take it out into the world.
Oh, Charlotte, you've been such an excellent example of someone who does actually take it out into the world. Thank you so much for being with us, and thank you for sharing something of your life's journey. It's been very interesting for me.
Thank you for having me.
Bye-bye, folks. See you next week.
Thank you for having tuned in to the Harmonic Concordance blogcast with Johnny Marahiel and special guest. For more information about the blog, please visit www.hcblog.org. We wish you peace and blessings on your journey. Namaste.